Hey, it's Mike Salk here. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk podcast. This episode is brought to you by Famous Dave's. That's America's favorite barbecue. To find a Famous Dave's near you, go to famousdaves.com.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
All right, let's go. The Brock and Salk show this morning here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. Seattle Sports app as well, plus all the podcast platforms, all of them, everywhere as we sit here today. The day before it all begins, I found myself thinking about it last night, about how, well, my life changes tomorrow. All of a sudden, every day, I just watch baseball.
And then you went outside this morning, and I was like, well, maybe the weather will be on its way after.
It didn't feel like baseball weather.
It didn't feel like spring yet.
No, not yet. No, it didn't really feel like baseball weather. But I did get that sense of, okay, like everything in my life kind of changes tomorrow, right? Like all just becomes what you do every day. Like baseball now enters your life for the next 6 months. And personally, I love that. It's a commitment, right? It's like a deep breath, like, okay, whew, here we go. Starting off baseball again tomorrow. Let's go. Let's get into it. Let's get into that mindset of checking it every day and what time and what's it look like and who's the starting pitcher and how do I feel and waking up the next morning and knowing that my mood will be in many ways dictated by how the game went the night before. I do love it. So excited for tomorrow. And we got a lot to chat about today. We'll play some Jeff Passan, who is remarkably optimistic about these Mariners. That's coming up here in 30 minutes. Yeah, a little bit. Everything makes me uneasy.
It's like, we're used to you being the wet blanket. You can't do this.
I know. Well, except
I saw
he did Morosi it last year.
He did it, yeah. To your post.
Yeah. Maura called that out yesterday, too. She goes, didn't he say this something similar
Jeff's
last year?
He's full of it. He's like, oh, this one's much better than last year. Like, no, that's not what you said last year.
Last year, I think he said
he liked him last year.
They're my
he
team
did.
To win the AL West
yeah.
last year.
Yeah. I mean, so he's full of it. He doesn't remember what he said last year. Plus, I think he makes it all up anyway. So, anyway, Jeff will be coming up here in 30 minutes. Yes, Morosi did respond to my comparison between them. Jeff's too cool for school. He can't respond to stuff like that. But Morosi, of course, it's like, yes, of course. That's a wonderful comparison. It would be great to be compared to Jeff, which is hysterical in its own
right.
One
of the nicest, friendliest human beings on the planet.
And truly most optimistic. He makes my mom look like, you know, a true pessimist. He's out of control. Anyway, I promise a lot of baseball today, but also some football since Mike McDonald spoke yesterday. Don't have sound of all of it. Believe me, if it existed, we would have it. Morris scours the internet for sound of everything. But I got three things I wanted to kind of come back to quickly here from McDonald. The first being, I love the way he really explains what it is he wants to do. I don't know whether this guy's going to be a great coach or not. He's never coached an NFL game in his life. Heck, he's never been the head coach of any team at the college or professional level in his life. So I don't know whether this is all going to work. But man, do I like the clarity with which he speaks and describes things. And if that works for us, I'm going to guess as a teacher, as a leader, it will work very well for his players. This is him talking about why he wants to blitz a lot. Let me read this to you. Let me get the Ebenezers on here and read this to you. By the way, what's up with Brock? That guy can't see.
That was pretty funny last night.
Sheesh.
You're like, should we talk to Kyle Brown about what's going on with the Cougs at 9:30? And then Brock goes, we've already got something at 8:30. We should talk to him at 9:30.
Sheesh.
It's like, that's what he does.
Why do I even write anything?
It's kind of adorable.
Yeah, kind of. All right, here it is. McDonald made it very clear he intends to blitz. Quote, if you want to play defense for us, you've got to be able to blitz. Whatever your one-on-one is, we expect you to win. We carry a team pass rush mentality. It's not going to be built around one guy. It's prudent to let everyone have a chance to win on any given play. But if you're going to blitz from off the ball, we expect you to win one-on-one. Those guys are going to hone their craft and figure out what moves work best for them. And when the matchups are in our favor, hopefully we're going to take advantage of those things. I like that. Doesn't that sound right? there's a level of expectation. Really, there's a level of how it all fits together.
And some, like, we're going to use data on how this actually works for each person.
And there's some accountability at the end of it. Like, no, the expectation is you win one-on-one. If you can't do it, we're going to find somebody else who can. I love it. Just very simple way of describing what this defense is going to look like. How about this one? Why is he focused on being strong up the middle? I think you know I'm going to love this. Because if you aren't, opponents are just going to gash you right up the middle. That's the quickest distance from point A to point B, which you're trying to avoid. But in general, we're trying to build a wall up the middle, trying to stay square, trying to set hard edges, make the balls that do go outside, make them throw the things outside. You don't want to get gashed up the middle of your defense. You've got to have the right guys who can play right there so you can get the job done. Both those quotes came courtesy of John Boyle, who wrote them all down. Thank you, John. We appreciate it. And I would just say, yes. Yes, please be strong up the middle. They haven't been for a while. Great on the edges, but be strong up the middle. Dominate up the middle. And yeah, I would consider an edge rusher to be up the middle. That's still the middle of the field. That's still playing from the tackles in. That's absolutely where I want them to be stronger. Absolutely where they've struggled. Absolutely where we've seen teams, especially on defense, just walk all over them over the last few years, whether it be running the ball down their throat for the 30th or 31st run defense in the league, or throwing it straight over the middle to hapless linebackers who were caught up. Guys, this is not brain surgery. Just watch those games. I don't watch film like an expert. I don't pretend I'm an expert. I know there's some folks out there that do. I'm not one of them, but I have eyes. I can watch the tape of the game and tell that they're getting destroyed up the middle.
Well, and it's such a stark contrast because they were trying to build like from the back end. They wanted the secondary to be their strength before, and that does not sound like that's how Mike McDonald wants to do it.
Nor should it. Build a team that is strong in the right spots. And it sounds like he's got a much better sense for roster building and where he wants his team to be great.
We've also heard this before, though. And now it's like, okay, you say all these things that you want to be.
Right.
Now go do it.
Go do them. Yeah, that's absolutely true. That is that's another. Hey, I didn't say he was good at executing yet.
I know, but he's saying the right things
right now.
He's
saying the right things. He's good at that, Justin. I think you wrote that last night.
I was like, hey, he certainly gets... He knows what you want to hear.
This is what I want. And he says them very clearly.
I don't get the vibe that he's telling you what you want to hear. It's because it isn't the same as what we heard from it. I mean, it is as far as every coach is going to tell you that they're going to succeed and that they have this plan. But it's much different than the plan we were hearing.
It's clearly a different plan. And I think it is also the plan that a lot of people in Seattle want to hear after some of the frustrations that we've had the last couple of years. I would say you're both right. Last one. And this is the one that I'm struggling with this one, guys. This is on re-signing Jamal Adams. We love Jamal. And if it's the right opportunity, I think we would jump at it. That's from The Athletic. Michael Sean. Mm-hmm. This keeps coming up. Everybody keeps reporting this. John keeps dropping hints. McDonald keeps dropping hints. Brock keeps saying that's what he's hearing behind the scenes. I guess it's likely to happen. Because usually in the NFL, when everybody says that, usually it's because it's going to happen. Otherwise, they just wouldn't say it. And
Wondre hasn't been brought up the same way.
Not even close. So I got to tell you, I don't see it. Brock probably come on Blue 88 and say, yeah, it's because of the blitz and he's good at that up the middle. Maybe he's good at helping a team blitz and the one-on-ones. Okay. Maybe he's a fit. I'm not saying he couldn't necessarily fit something they want to do as kind of a third down linebacker, hybrid blitzer, et cetera. I just feel like I've heard too many times in the last few years what a liability he was defensively in the passing game. And I feel like I've heard too many times over the last few years about some of the issues that they've had in the locker room. You can't find somebody else to do that at this point. You can't find somebody else to play three games and get hurt?
Do you want to invest all that into him? Yes, and then the fear of injury again, because it's become such a, like, I would think he'd have trouble passing a physical after how last year turned out.
Yeah,
I would think all of those things are true. I'm surprised that this is the direction they want to go. Maybe it'll work out great. And obviously he's a talented dude and he's got some unique talents. And I'm sure the coaching staff, I'm sorry, the football operations staff is frustrated that they never really got what they wanted out of that trade. But just, I think, let it go. I think it's just a sunk cost, and you just let it go and move on and find a different direction to go. Anyway, we got so much to do today. I do have so much baseball to talk. I got a lot more football. Brock's got stuff he wants. We got guest caller. Sam Howell is going to join us at 7:30. Did you know that?
The Sam Howell.
The
quarterback.
We don't know what number he's wearing yet, do we? Somebody asked me last night, hey, what number is he going to wear? We got to find out. This is important. He seems like a number 8. Is that what he wore in Washington, number 8?
He was 14.
He feels like a number 8 to me.
Yeah, he was a 14.
Don't Washington. You think he should be a number 8?
Look at way more about this.
Maura, open your eyes.
He wore 7 in college. So
open your eyes,
high.
Both of you. Look at him and tell me he doesn't look like a number 8.
Why don't I remember you talking about Drew Locke's number?
What's wrong with him being a number 2?
I didn't even talk about Drew Locke.
So you're way more invested in Sam Howell already.
Yes, than I was in Drew Locke. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I would say he's a number 8, mm-hmm. and I would encourage him to wear that number. He'll join us at 7:30. Brady from the owners' meetings at 8:30. Kyle will give us a kook perspective on Pat Chun at 9:30. Stick around. There's a lot to come on Brock and Salk.
Massive. The Power of Pop Culture is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition, featuring iconic artifacts from Batman, Barbie, and more. Make plans to visit Seattle's destination museum for film, fashion, music, and gaming. Tickets and info at mopop.org.
Sign up for Mariners Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariners Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and of course, the classic cue, you know it, digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich, or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast, a full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, or the Georgia chop pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to famousdaves.com to learn more. That's famousdaves.com.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
All right, it's done. Finally, time for games that count. The Mariners wrap up their spring training with another win yesterday, this time rallying for a 7-6 victory in San Diego. And yes, it was Julio Rodriguez who made the most noise.
Here's the pitch to Julio, swinging a drive deep to left field out to the Brown building out there, and goodbye baseball. Out to the base of the Western Metal Supply Company, Julio Rodriguez, a line shot home run. His second home run of the spring. It comes with J.P. aboard, and the Mariners have a very quick 2-0 lead here in the top of the first inning. What a bolt by Julio.
Yeah, sure was. Nice to see him getting himself in shape and ready. Home run for Dylan Moore as well. Pretty nice outing, actually, for Casey Lawrence, who went five strong, allowed only two runs in the first. Look, he may very well be a guy that we see. He might be the next guy up if anything happens in this rotation. Going to take the day off today. Then it's time to play real games tomorrow. Ben Gibbard will have the national anthem. Nelson Cruz throwing out the first pitch. Oh, and by the way, he'll join us tomorrow at 9:30. Luis Castillo, of course, will be on the hill. Scott Servais, ready to go.
Good way to end our spring. And we played. I thought it would end in a tie, actually, because we probably tied more games than ever seen us tie. But, no, it was good. Yeah. Young kids playing, just get through the game and go from there. So, we're anxious to get home and get this thing rolling and see what we look like when the bell rings.
Well, the bell's going to ring tomorrow, which should be pretty darn exciting, man. I am pumped for tomorrow evening. Jordan Montgomery goes to the Diamondbacks on a one-year deal for $25 million. That contract vests into a second year at the same price if he makes 10 starts. This seems to be bringing up a lot of Mariner fan agita. It's like everything that seemed to be moving positively in people's minds the last few days and weeks, just it all came rushing back the moment they didn't sign Jordan Montgomery. Yes, it was an affordable contract, but I don't know. I was a little surprised by some of the reaction. Agita, yeah. Glad he goes to the National League. Could they have done it? Yes. Would I have done it if it killed the flexibility in season? No, I don't think so.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Could Jamal Adams be returning before he ever really left? The guys in charge of this team sure keep hinting at it, so you would think it's a pretty real possibility. By all accounts, the football ops folks have always wanted him to just be a linebacker, so this would be a chance to make that happen. For me, I would just rather try it another way, just for the sake of just doing something new. As for the quarterback spot, we're going to talk to Sam Howell coming up a little over an hour from now at 7:30. But Mike McDonald says, yeah, we're pretty sure about what we want each of those roles to be.
Yeah, like a number split on snaps. You know, I don't know, but it's going to be your conventional. We'll see what Ryan thinks and what's the right split. But Gino's going to go into camp. He's the starter and really excited about that. But then, you know, obviously Sam needs a lot of reps too, as well as if there's a third quarterback on the roster, you know, those guys got to develop as well. So we'll figure out the right mix. Everybody on the team, we might not be competing for one and two, but those guys are going to be getting after it every day to develop and bring the team along and compete with themselves to try to make them the best player they can be. So that's what we expect.
Well, I'm curious to see how that will work and how you have enough time for all of the things they want to do. The proof is not in what they say. The proof is in what they do and how many reps each of these guys actually gets once we show up and get a chance to watch them at training camp. So, we'll keep our eyes peeled for that one.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, just a couple days after Troy Dannon left Washington in the lurch, they brought in his replacement, pretty familiar name, Wazoo AD Pat Chun, moves across the state to take over on Montlake. Weird situation, as he's essentially been at war with the school for the last year or so over the dissolving of the Pac-12, but he has done a heck of a job in Pullman. A little surprised that maybe Kyle Smith didn't join him, and instead he had already left for Stanford. And then I think Cook fans are upset. That's what Brock told me. I understand why, but also feel like the fate was sealed last year. This is just sort of the actual execution. So we'll talk to Kyle Brown about it. He's pretty fired up in his own way. So we'll do that at 9:30 this morning. And hey, how about the best game the Kraken have played in weeks? They cruised to a 4-0 win over Anaheim. It helps that the Ducks stink and the Joey DeCord had a good night, another shutout for him. But what I loved yesterday, the energy. First line was really, really good. And then the fourth line with Logan Morrison making his debut with Cartier and Ryan Winterton just seemed to juice up the whole team. Those guys actually got 14, 15 shifts, which was great. All right, that's everything you need to know. 9:45 here on the Brock and Salk Show.
Do you think the anger is just mostly like, come on, anywhere but there? Like, that's...
Anywhere but Arizona?
What? UW. Arizona? UW.
Oh, I thought you were talking about... Sorry, about the Jordan Montgomery thing.
Nope, sorry. Just like that's where most of the Brock's text apoplectic.
Right.
Just come on, anywhere.
But where else was he going to go? I mean, realistically, it's what made perfect sense.
I'm not supporting him. Just saying that's probably what I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I get it.
Sealed, fine.
Here's the thing is I completely understand Cougar fans that are upset and angry and furious, and they have every right to be. I mean, what's happened to the program is unfair. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. I'm with you. I just... weird that yesterday would have felt like the end. Like, well, the end had already really kind of taken place. I mean, we've known this for since August. right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been almost a year, I mean, since all of this really went down, and, like, we all knew it was over. This
we
is
didn't
just,
know Troy Dannon was going somewhere, and, like, that, like, we didn't know Pat Chum was going to go to
Pat
UW.
Chum was going
to
go somewhere.
Yeah,
Kyle
but
Smith was
going to
go
part.
Somewhere.
It's the UW part that's really getting Wazoo
really?
Fans. Yeah.
I don't get that.
That's what
have
I mean,
you not
yeah.
noticed just, there's a rivalry the entire time?
I just see anywhere but there.
Really? I just feel like
oh
it's
goodness.
Such a silly rivalry. That
really? Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Oh, they're upset that he went to UW?
Stop it.
He'll leave UW in another year. Who cares?
It's like the...
He's not going to stay at UW. He's going to leave there in a few years. Don't worry about it. Guys, chill. It's going to be just fine. Coming up, Jeff Passan.
Don't worry. Brock's coming on later, and he did a very everybody sympathetic, relax. Passionate video that I think will help
well, I mean,
you guys
I feel
if
bad
you're not
for them, too, but not because
Fox.
He's going to UW. Who cares? I don't know. I don't get it.
Number
right.
one.
We'll come yes. right back. I don't understand college sports. It's just dumb. Let's come right back. We'll give you Jeff Passan, who is very, very, very excited about the upcoming seasons. Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Massive, the power of pop culture, is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition, featuring iconic artifacts from artists Beyonce, Nirvana, and more. All throughout May, Washington residents receive special discounts on tickets and memberships. Tickets at mopop.org/maycation.
Greater service, greater diamond options, and greater savings. The only professional office for diamonds and diamond jewelry. By appointment only in Tacoma or globally by phone or email, bestdiamondprice.com or on Instagram at KANTOR Diamond.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh, my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and, of course, the classic cue. You know it. Digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich. Or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast. A full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, or the Georgia chopped pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to famousdaves.com to learn more. That's famousdaves.com.
You're free now, free to stream beyond your wildest dreams, free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber, your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It must be getting real close to the beginning of baseball season here because Jeff Passan is back for our regular Tuesday conversation. Every Tuesday at 8:30, we sit down with Jeff and get ourselves excited about the season. He's not there yet, though. We're
wonder
still
how his back
for
is. Yeah. He's back. You know, I mean, after breaking that thing like Tyson, spinal, I wonder if that back, if he's feeling it, if he's healed, if he's ready to go, ready to carry this show again, Saul, because he does every Tuesday at 8:30.
I wonder if he's had anything to think about, talk about, write about here with the start of a baseball season, the absolute insanity around this Shohei Ohtani story. And oh, by the way, what's going on in the baseball union is an entire issue unto itself. I mean, you could spend quite some time. We probably won't spend a lot, but there is a reckoning going on in the union as well. So lots going on in the world of baseball. Jeff Passan joins us now. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I am great, gentlemen. How are you?
We're also great. Baseball is, there's all sorts of good stuff in baseball. I want to make sure we have time for all of it. So let's jump right in. 2 days away from opening day. What's your outlook on the Mariners this year?
I am very bullish on the Mariners in 2024. And I'll be honest, I flirted with picking them to go to the World Series this year. Wow. I didn't do it, but I don't think that it is unrealistic to believe that they have the talent and the ability to win a championship with this team. There are still flaws on this roster, but there are flaws on every roster. And when you have the kind of pitching that they do, particularly the kind of starting pitching that they do, it can take you a really long way. And I understand that up until this point, it hasn't, but they also haven't had a full year with the five guys that they've got. And well, Brian Wu's starting the season on the injured list. I think the expectation is that he's going to be back and should make a, you know, pretty reasonable number of starts. And that's what this is all going to come down to, guys. If the starting pitching stays healthy the way that it has in recent seasons, I think that the Mariners are going to be in a fantastic position, despite being in an absolute meat grinder of a division in the American League West.
Well, this is weird, Brock. I thought we were going to talk to Passan every week, but apparently It's going to be John Morosi. I'm just very surprised. The level of optimism is shocking to me. I thought we were getting Jeff Passan, and instead, Moore, did you call the wrong number? Did you call Morosi instead? What's happened here?
He sounds like Passan.
I know, but the words are very Morosi-like.
I know. It's amazing. I have hair, too. Somehow, like this, you know?
So if we were to rewind,
John's my boy, I'm sorry. You know what? He speaks a lot more languages than I do, so
sure does.
He's got that going for him.
If we were to rewind the clock back to this exact time last year, a couple days before the opener, when we had you on for the first time, were you as bullish in 23 as you seem to be in 24?
No, and I think that's in large part because, not just of the moves they made this winter, which remember, like early on in the winter, it was a nightmare for Mariners fans. You know, Jared Kelnick had been traded in essentially a salary dump. Gino Suarez had been traded essentially in a salary dump. And still, when you look at the Mariners payroll for this upcoming season, it is not where it should be. It's very simple. They're in a special window right now, and this is when you add, and I still don't think that they've added to the extent that they could have or should have, but this is the reality that they're dealing with right now. And when you objectively look at this roster and who they have, I think that Julio Rodriguez has as good of a chance as anyone to win the MVP award in the American League this year. I think that Cal Raleigh is really going to cement himself as one of the best catchers in the big leagues. I think that J.P. Crawford has the ability to turn around and be a five-win player again like he was last year. And bringing in Jorge Polanco and adding a bat like Mitch Garver and, Mitch Haniger 2.0 in Seattle, we've got things that, to me, make this a better team than it was last season.
Let's focus on Julio for a moment. Year three for Julio. By the way, I totally agree with your take that he seems to be poised for an MVP kind of a season.
Can I just interrupt? I'm working on a Julio story right now that's going to be so cool, and I'm so excited for it.
Give us a hint? Anything?
No, I don't want to do that. I want it to be a surprise because I want Mariners. It's a good story.
Cool.
This is not going to be about $4.5 million being stolen from his bank account.
Good. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Good. He just has everything put together so well for somebody who's 23 years old. Like, he just gets it. And I think that there comes that point in every player's career where their mental game matches up to their physical game. And that's when we see the absolute apex of what they can be. And I think this is the year that that happens for Julio Rodriguez, which is kind of frightening considering how good he's been in his first two seasons already, Mike.
Is year three sort of a typical season for a player to put everything together?
I don't have anything objective to back that up. In my head, and having covered this game 20 plus years, that sounds right. It's almost like you've shaken off the doldrums of a rookie season, and you've gotten through that sophomore year that can be so difficult for some guys. And you're almost a veteran by that third year. And it's silly to say that about someone who's 23 years old, that they're a veteran at this point, but you understand not just the rigors of the game and what it takes to succeed, but you're starting to mature and understand your place in it as well, and your place inside of a clubhouse that increasingly is going to be turning toward you to be a leader and to be a central figure. You know, you're not the young guy anymore. You're not green in that third year. Like, you are established at that point. And I suppose the contract that the Mariners gave Julio Rodriguez cemented him in that place. But it's more about, I think, accepting and acknowledging that place rather than it being foisted on you because of a dollar figure, because of the number of years you're going to be around.
Okay, Jeffrey, give me realistic expectations for Julio in 24. Give me unrealistic expectations.
Oh, man. Realistic expectations. I don't think it is. I'm gonna look at rate stats, right? I think that he's going to hit somewhere in the 280, 290 range. I think he's going to get on base at least 35% of the time, and I think he's going to slug, 525 minimum. I think the power is going to really pick up this year. And unrealistic, 45. Like, I could see him hitting 45 home runs this year. I could see him stealing 45 bases this year. That is at the edge, that's 95th percentile projection right there. Mm-hmm. But I do not discount anything with him. And it goes back to that combination of physical with the growth of mental. I think he's finally beginning to understand who he is and where he fits into this, not just place in Seattle and anchor of the Mariners franchise, but in the entirety of Major League Baseball. Like, he's one of the guys now. He's one of the guys who everyone in the sport is going to look at and say, I wish I were him. And I think instead of cowering from it or shying away, he embraces it and runs with it.
A couple more on the Mariners, and then I definitely want to make sure we have some time to ask you about the biggest national story here in baseball. But, kind of talking through the need for their pitching to stay healthy. I agree with you. If they're healthy, they're an unbelievable pitching staff. But already we're seeing, Brian Wu go to the injured list, and we'll see how long this takes. Hopefully it's just, the 10 or 12 days they're talking about. But you kind of look through it, and in the last few years, Jeff, all the guys they've either graduated or traded, Kirby, Miller, Wu, Gilbert, Brash, plus trading Williamson and Levi Stout. I mean, that's like 7 or 8 guys that they've all brought up through their system. And now there's not like a tremendous amount of depth left in the high minors. What do you do if...
I don't know, man. If you can fill in with Emerson Hancock in that
he's the one.
Spot, you're doing okay.
He's the one.
And if you can pop a guy like Logan Evans toward, and for those unfamiliar with Logan Evans, he was an average college starter, mm-hmm. Who I believe the Mariners took in the 7th round last year. He was a later round draft pick, and I got a text from somebody from a scout this spring who said, "Do you know who Logan Evans is?" And I said, "No, should I?" And he said, "Yes, absolutely. He's on the backfields." On the backfields with the Mariners, like sitting 99. And that's, that's why I'm as bullish on the Mariners guys as I am. It's not just the talent that they've got in the big leagues right now. It's a sustained ability to draft, find internationally, and develop guys. And, man, you know, the things that I've heard this spring about Johnny Farmello and Colt Emerson, two of their three first-round picks last year, these are guys who could both be top 25 prospects by the time the year is over.
Yeah. So you don't think they need to go out and acquire another pitcher?
No. Do you?
Not necessarily. Not like a big-name pitcher, but, you know, those sort of 4A types of guys that just sort of help you get through a season.
I mean, but that's not going to cost anything. Like that's not a difficult guy to find. And you know, if they can scratch together a little coin, Mike Clevenger's still out there as well. Like,
oh, no.
I'm just saying.
I refuse to watch Mike Clevenger pitch for any amount of time. I'm out. That's a non-starter.
Okay, fine, whatever. My point is, there are guys who are available, and they will not cost a whole lot to get. And so, if you know, I think if there's another injury, maybe that's something you consider. And it's you know, normally I wouldn't suggest that for a team, but when you're in a division with the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, every win's going to count. And I do think all three of them are playoff teams this year, but it is going to be health dependent all the way around. And the Astros rotation is, you know, about as banged up as any out there these days. You know, Justin Verlander is going to start the year on the injured list. Luis Garcia is going to be out for half the season. Lance McCullers out for half the season. Jose Urquidy has an elbow problem. Like, there's a lot of issues right now with the Astros. And that's something that it's why I think a good start, it's not a necessity, but it would be a really nice luxury for the Mariners to start off hot.
Is Polanco good?
Polanco's really good, yes.
Can you give me some assurance, the Mariners fans, some assurance he's not Colton Wong?
I think Jorge Polanco at his peak was much better than Colton Wong at his peak. And I'm just like, I look at the, you know, he's 30 years old. Like, he's still in the prime of his career, late prime at least. And I do not anticipate that Jorge Polanco, when you look at the consistency of his bat, the big question with him has always been, is he going to stay on the field? He had a spectacular season in 2021. And since then, I think he's played 100 games and 80 games in back-to-back seasons. If he is out on the field, he's a genuine 30 home run threat. Probably going to be likelier in the 20s, but it's still the type of bat that plays in a championship lineup.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And it sure seems to be a lot of doubles in there as well, as the Mariners have kind of made a switch away from sort of the boomer bust three true outcome guys and seem to be looking for a little bit more contact. We'll see if that works. And something tells me
why Patson's so bullish on him.
That's a story we're going to be talking about throughout this season. I got to spend a few minutes on Shohei, though, before we let you go. And what do you think happened yesterday? I mean, he spoke. He certainly went on the offensive. He didn't answer questions. Yeah. What do you make of it?
I think he told the version of the story that we are going to hear from him going forward. And if it wasn't clear already from Tisha Thompson's reporting, then I think it is abundantly clear now. He is painting himself in this case as a victim. And if the facts as he laid them out are indeed true, then he was. You know, the way that Shohei Ohtani talked about Ipe Mitsuhara, that he was more than his interpreter. He was a confidant. He was a brother. He was a seminal figure in his life. And then to say, essentially, he betrayed me and stole, you know, Shohei Ohtani didn't use a number. We, you know, the number that we've printed is $4.5 million. So it's a lot of money, and it's a huge breach of trust. And, you know, I keep hearing from from people who were skeptical about the story. And skepticism in this case, with the story changing the way that it did, is entirely warranted. But the skepticism about how could he have access to money like this, I think it looks past the idea that Ipe Mitsuhara was so much more for Shohei Ohtani than just an interpreter, and that it is not beyond the realm of possibility that he did have access to a bank account that had that kind of money.
What questions do you want the answers to?
I would like to know, to whom did Ohtani's people refer a criminal, not complaint, but criminal activity? So what agency did they reach out to?
Why?
I would like to know, because if, listen.
Because Tisha said, it's funny, Tisha Thompson said the exact same thing when I asked her that on, what was it, Thursday or Friday last week. And I was surprised that that was her answer. It was your answer also. Why is that so important?
It's important because I think it goes to the veracity of Ohtani's story. If you are alleging a massive theft, Mike, and then you're not following up with criminal authorities on this massive theft, then, I mean, how do we know that the massive theft even happened at that point? What that does is that validates Ohtani's version of the story because it opens him up to scrutiny when investigators are looking into the details of what actually happened.
That makes sense.
Beyond that, I would love to know the very granular details of what happened between the clubhouse meeting where Ipe Mitsuhara stood up in front of the Dodgers team and talked about how he had a gambling problem and how Shohei was helping him out, and exactly how and when it dawned on Ohtani that, okay, something's a little fishy here. Who did he talk with? How did they discuss it? And how did it get to the point where the Dodgers fired Mitsuhara? And, you know, this is a much larger point, but I would just like to know where all of this fits into this expansive federal investigation into an alleged illegal bookmaker, and where that fits among all of the other players involved. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of thing that I think is going to take a long, long time to piece together, and it's why this story is just in the beginning. You know, we have Ohtani's version at this point, but getting authorities' version as well, because they have all of the things that we as reporters don't. They have subpoena power. They have the ability to compel witnesses to testify in a case. And they have that under the penalty of perjury. When you have those levers, you are far likelier to get the full truth than anything that reporters can be told. You know, we're talking with as many people as possible and trying to piece together the details and get a greater sense of what actually happened. But, you know, sometimes as reporters, we're told stories and we do our very best to verify them before we put them into print. And that's what we're doing right now and what we're going to continue to do.
Last thing for me, Jeffrey, in 7 days, we'll talk to you again. We will have 5 Mariners games under our belt against the Red Sox and others. What headlines, what stories would we love to hear as Mariner fans over those first 5 games?
That they're 5-0.
Boom. Speak it.
Well, that's very simple.
Yeah, thank you. That's great.
That's not a storyline.
That's a great way to end a passing. Thank you. Appreciate you.
That's it.
Ask a better question.
All right.
I take no responsibility for my brother over here. He asks fine. What he asks. I got nothing on that. I got 1 or 2 more minutes with you though. I don't want to end just yet. And I know this is probably not like the biggest story on a lot of people's radar right now, but I think it's going to end up as one, and that's what's happening with the union. We had Evan Drellick on last week, and he kind of gave us his update on what he thinks is going on. What do you make of this story of what's happening with the union?
It's been fascinating to me. And for those unfamiliar, there was essentially a challenge to Major League Baseball Players Association leadership led by Harry Marino, who was the 33-year-old lawyer who organized and eventually helped unionize minor league players. So this is not like some backbencher making a power play. Like, this is somebody who's been involved in these sorts of things and believed that the union was poorly run and that change needed to be had. And what happened ended up fracturing the union pretty well, which is like music to Major League Baseball's ears, mm-hmm. 2.5 years away from a collective bargaining agreement. And the ultimate upshot of this is that Tony Clark, the longtime executive director, is going to remain in his role. There's still questions about Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator, who Marino had proposed essentially taking his job over. But ultimately, what this does is it forces the MLBPA to get its you-know-what together over the next year plus before these collective bargaining agreement talks begin, because let's not forget, there was a 99-day lockout in 2021, and we were very close to having a season that was in peril. And when you have the frustration with the free agent market that you have among a large number of players from this offseason, that's the sort of stuff that tends to embolden a group of players. And the fact that these players' leadership has been weakened at this point only makes the likelihood, I fear, of an even longer work stoppage greater. And I hate to say that. I wish that were not the case. But already there had been rumblings behind the scenes of something that's going to be more extended than last time. Now, we don't know until the talks begin, Mike. That's an important thing to note. Like, this is a long way away, and things can happen between now and then that change that. But the frustration of players is palpable at this point, and Major League Baseball has done a really good job in collective bargaining talks over the last two decades, really wresting control from the union, and the union wants to grab it back.
It's going to be an interesting story. We'll keep talking about it maybe a little bit almost every week, Jeff, but thank you. We're glad we have you back for another season. I'm sorry that I called you John Morosi earlier. I'm sure that you will find a way to be more pessimistic as time goes on. We count on you for it.
No doubt.
Yes, good.
I'm sorry you couldn't answer my hard question. That's okay. Maybe next time. I know it's our first show of the year. We'll get there. Appreciate you passing.
All right. Jeff,
it's my pleasure, Brock. I appreciate I appreciate the effort, and I know next time I come on that the shame of this moment will cause you to ask better questions.
It'll be better.
I feel like this is a motivating factor, and you know that's what Coach is here for, buddy.
There was a shot, I think, at the end of that. You took my cheap shot right out.
We're out of time.
Sorry, we're a little late.
That's probably for the best. You can go back and find it on the podcast if you want to hear me taking cheap shots at Jeff. All right, up next, a lot of people using the word cheap and taking some cheap shots this morning. Is it warranted? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.